Hey everybody, welcome to another edition of the Crystal Ball Run podcast from crystalballrun.com. Make sure you follow us on Twitter at crystalballrun. Like us on Facebook at facebook.com/crystalballrun. You can also check us out on Google Plus, YouTube, and of course iTunes. Make sure you subscribe to the podcast. We also have a newsletter that goes out twice a week, so make sure you subscribe to that as well. I'm Kevin McGuire, happy to be with you here, as always, talking some college football. Today we're going to be talking to Bud Elliott, the National Recruiting Analyst for SB Nation. He's also the man in charge over at TomahawkNation.com. We're going to be talking a little bit about the big game that's coming up this weekend, Florida State and Miami. So it's not a real busy weekend in college football, but there is a game that we're all going to be paying attention to here at Crystal Ball Run. I'm sure you will be as well. Florida State and Miami, a battle of two top 10 teams. One probably has a little bit more of a case to be in the top 10, but we're going to talk to Bud Elliott now from Tomahawk Nation. You can follow him on Twitter at Tomahawk Nation. Bud, how you doing today?
Kevin, doing pretty well yourself.
Doing well. Things have been pretty crazy around in Tallahassee. How's it going with Florida State now?
Yeah, folks are certainly liking the product that FSU's put on the field so far this year.
Yeah.
They played well in recent years, but this is certainly a different level, and folks are really excited to see what the team can continue to do.
Yeah, I want to talk a little bit about the development of Florida State over the last couple of years, because I know you've been following this team as well as anyone out there, and I know you follow recruiting very well too, so I want to get your take on some of that. But of course, let's talk about Florida State coming off another big win in ACC play. It seems like they're just tearing through this conference already, maybe except for Boston College, but hey, they pulled that one out in a pretty brilliant fashion as well. They get passed by Oregon in the BCS standings. I don't know how much people are panicking about that at this point in the game, because I still feel that things are going to play itself out, and if Florida State's there at the end, they'll certainly be deserving of it. What is the take on Florida State as far as the BCS championship is concerned? Are people really gearing up for a BCS championship run for the first time in a while?
Yeah, I certainly think they are. You mentioned the freak out about the BCS standings coming out on Sunday. At least from our readership, I had prepped our guys, and I said, look, If Oregon beats UCLA, which they should, because UCLA is really not that good, Oregon's going to pass Florida State. If you understand the math, it's a certainty because of confirmation bias, and that a lot of these coaches look at this as sort of a survive in advance. They don't necessarily re-rank each team every week. So Oregon started the year at number two. As long as they keep winning, very, very low chance that Florida State will pass them in the coaches' poll if Florida State also stays undefeated. So I think they understand that Florida State needs Oregon or Alabama to lose a ball game, most likely to go to the championship game. So at least from our normal readers, I didn't see much of a freak out. Now on Twitter, people tweeting at me, oh my God, I can't believe this. It's a conspiracy, all this other stuff. That's Twitter.
It absolutely is. And it's a pretty interesting debate right now as to who has the better shot or who's more deserving of being number two. I think everybody is pretty unanimous that Alabama, until something else happens, should probably be number one. But the debate between Oregon and Florida State, it's pretty interesting to me because I don't know if I see similarities, but I see offense is just completely dominating. And of course, their defense has been playing pretty well for both teams. If you had to take a guess right now where Florida State is at the end of the year, do you think that they're in that BCS championship game, or are they just going to be an ACC champion, go to maybe the Orange Bowl or whatever, playing for number three?
I think Florida State probably has the highest chance to win out of the three teams. I think Oregon clearly has the least chance to win out because they do still have to play on the road at Stanford, and then they're going to have to play their Pac-12 title game. And I believe everybody left on Oregon's schedule actually has a winning record. Florida State has already played the majority of the tougher games in the schedule. It still has to go to the Swamp, but Florida is is kind of a shell of what it was to start the year. They're more than three touchdown favorites over Miami at home, and then they'll probably get that Miami team again in the ACC title game. So I think Oregon is the least likely to win out. If you had to ask me, of those three teams, which two are going to be in the title game, I think I would probably go with Alabama and Florida State.
All right, well, we'll see how that all plays out. Again, I think until Alabama loses, they're certainly going to be your number one team. So it's really just a race for number two as far as I'm concerned. I think Oregon, Florida State, I go back and forth between them on a week-to-week basis. We'll see where we are this time next week, of course. Of course, Florida State's taking on Miami, a familiar foe, a traditional rival for Florida State. You obviously know this a lot better than I do. But I was looking back at some of the past games, and it's been a while since we've really seen a game of this kind of magnitude between these two schools. Certainly since Miami joined the ACC, it seems like Miami's finally on track to becoming that contender in the conference. I still feel like they are a few stages away from being at the same level as Florida State going into this week. What's your take on the series rivalry between Florida State and Miami? Is this the biggest game that you've seen in a while?
Yeah, I think it probably is the biggest game in a while. I thought the 2010 game was very important because that was supposed to be the year that Randy Shannon was going to take Miami really to that next level. And Florida State went down to Coral Gables and whipped him 45-17. And that basically got Randy Shannon fired along with the loss to USF there and definitely got Jimbo Fisher's South Florida recruiting really, really cranked up down there because all those kids saw, you know, Florida State go in and just lay the beat down on a Miami team that was favored and supposed to win that game fairly handily. But, yeah, this does seem like the biggest matchup in a while, at least in terms of hype. You have College Game Day there. I'm not convinced Miami is a top 10 team. If you told me they're one of the best 20 in the country, I don't really have any qualms with that. But top 10, I really don't – I haven't seen it yet. They beat Florida almost solely on turnovers. I think Florida outgained them by well over 200 yards. You know, it needed last-second comebacks to beat a five-loss UNC team and barely beat Wake Forest last weekend.
Right.
So to me, I don't know. I have a hard time buying them. And I think our fans sense that as well. I know by far our most trafficked article this entire week, it's been an article about the boosters not opening the parking lots for booster tailgating until 2 o'clock.
That's apparently a huge issue, right?
It's a fairly big issue, but I think it also speaks to fans just not being necessarily nearly as hyped up about a quote-unquote top 10 matchup as they would be. The excitement for the Clemson game just 2 weeks ago was so much bigger than this.
Yeah, I think like you said, and I said this earlier, I don't know if Miami's really a top 10 team. I think they've really just gotten there through other teams losing and stumbling along the way, and they've just been taking advantage of that. So I think we get a little bit of a dose of reality for Miami. But I will say this, I think that Al Golden has this program on the right track. I think you'll probably recognize that as well.
Yeah, oh, for sure. Yeah. I think Al has done a great job. Him deciding to stay certainly is a real big blessing for Miami. I believe that his wife really likes South Florida, and that certainly played a part in it. He also has that long-term deal, which runs, I think, through 2020. But him staying there and sticking it out, and remember, he decided to stick it out before we knew that the NCAA botched that investigation. You know, right. He decided to stick it out when it was very, very possible that Miami could get totally hammered by the NCAA. And he's clearly been rewarded, you know, for his decision to do that. Miami's recruiting pretty well right now. Some, you know, issues still with the program. Obviously, they don't have a stadium. Their infrastructure and you know, alumni and booster base and all that is really not where the other elites in college football are. But when you have all that talent around you in South Florida, you can really make something out of it.
Talking to Bud Elliott from Tomahawk Nation. You can check him out on SB Nation. He's also following the recruiting very closely. But I want to talk about the development of Florida State over the last couple of years. Of course, we all remember when Bobby Bowden had to kind of be forced out of the position and they handed over the program to Jimbo Fisher. And I think he has done a tremendous job as far as recruiting. So you got to give me a little insight on what you're seeing Jimbo Fisher doing with the recruiting classes that he's put together so far. What's different now than maybe the later stages of the Bobby Bowden era?
Oh, gosh. almost everything.
Really. Almost everything.
Their support staff has tripled under Jimbo. They very much want to go with the same model. We have a lot of people working there. You don't want to have any kids, you know, high school tape that gets sent in, go unwatched. I know they want to have two or three coaches watching each tape to evaluate it and grade it. Jimbo actually approves all offers, and he's extremely involved in recruiting. More so than probably any other coach in the country. He literally is the he's not entitled the recruiting coordinator, but in practice, he's the one that does the final stamp on all the offers that go out and all that. He's a very good evaluator of talent. This is something Nick Saban has praised him for, going back even to the LSU days. And Florida State has certainly signed its share of five stars. In fact, I believe it has 7 5 stars starting on this defense, which is just nuts. There's a lot of teams that haven't signed 7 5 stars in a decade. But they've also done a really good job on some of the under-radar kids, and especially when he first came on in 2010 there as a head coach, they had to sign some 3 stars because they weren't necessarily going to beat out those Urban Meyer Florida teams for 5-star recruits all the time. So they did a great job evaluating some of the the under-the-radar kids, and they've taken kids, and I know every team's going to talk about how you take kids to fit your program But they really had done a nice job of taking kids that fit what they wanted to do on both offense and defense.
Yeah, I think you always have to try to balance it out between both sides because you don't want to be too lopsided and depend too much on one side of the football, either way, offense or defense. So obviously the big name this season for Florida State has been Jameis Winston. So you've been following Florida State and you've probably gotten an earlier look than a lot of people did at this kid. Are you surprised by the level of success he has had so quickly on the field, or did you see anything that suggested this is exactly what Florida State was going to be getting from day one?
You know, if he had played in fall camp like he did in spring ball, I would have been the annoying Florida State writer out there way on the edge and saying this kid is going to be a superstar. He's going to be the ACC player of the year. Because in fall camp, you know, we always knew he had the physical talents. For him to put it together, excuse me, in spring ball, he put it together so quickly and really had a grasp of the offense. They were running no huddle stuff where he just goes and calls every play, a redshirt freshman in his first spring. So that was extremely impressive. But then come fall, I don't know if Winston got bored or if he just got cocky or whatever, but he threw a lot of picks and really was not that great in fall. And some people will tell you that Jacob Coker, their backup, who is going to be a prime college football free agent when he graduates in December here, a lot of people will tell you he beat him out. And Winston stuck, or Fisher stuck with Winston, I think primarily because they were already using Winston in recruiting and because of how well Winston had played in the spring. If you remember in the spring game, I think he was like 13 of 15 for 270 or something like that. It would have been almost impossible to tell your fans, hey, remember that superstar that came and watched in the spring game? Yeah, he's not going to start. So luckily they did go with Winston. But I was a little skeptical on how he would play in the game, whether he would, you know, be more disciplined or whether he would just be a total gunslinger and try to bomb it all the time. And to his credit, he has dialed it down a good bit, and he doesn't try to throw the home run ball on every single play. And Jimbo still gets on him a little bit. Hey, you need to take that check down, especially on early downs when you don't necessarily need a first down there. You know, don't try to fit that ball in. But let's just be honest here. The kid, you know, he throws 96 to 97 on the mound. He's Florida State's closer in baseball. He has a special arm, and he has really huge hands and is able to manipulate the football. You know, he can make it die and put it over defenders, or he can rifle it down the field. It's stuff we really haven't seen in Tallahassee in forever.
Did you mention that he's also playing baseball? Are we projecting him to be playing football at the next level, or is he considering baseball as a future? I'm not really familiar with his baseball history.
You know, he was drafted, I believe, in the 17th round by the Texas Rangers. A lot of people thought he could have gone higher if he was likely to sign and play baseball, but everybody knew number one quarterback recruit in the country. You know, you beat Nick Saban and Stanford there, who had just handed your luck for him.
Right.
He's going to play some football, so they didn't draft him quite as high. And I think at the next level, he is going to play football. He really seems to enjoy that. I think he likes the toughness and the competitiveness that you get playing football, and not necessarily there in baseball so much.
Yeah, definitely. It's really been amazing to me to watch a kid that's so young really handle the responsibilities and the leadership that go with being a starting quarterback. We've all seen by now probably the clip of him in the locker room before the Clemson game. You could see how loose he was, and that's really a credit to him as well as the coaching staff and really the players around him for you know, adopting and kind of learning what he's made of and really playing around him as well.
Yeah, it's I said this today on a different radio spot. He is the youngest player on this offense among the starters and among a lot of the reserves as well. And yet, to a man, they all just love this guy and they'll follow him and do literally exactly what he says. And last year, when interviewing these kids on a weekly basis, they said things that were somewhat similar to what they were saying about Jameis when they were talking about EJ. Mm-hmm. But it almost seemed like, okay, this is what we are expected to say about our quarterback. This year, it's very impromptu. They just come out, you know, talk about how much they love the dude, how much they'll do anything for him, how much hard they want to play for him. And you really see these receivers go all out to make these catches. The offensive line is blocking extremely well. There's actually a clip in the Clemson game where Florida State's running back calls out Clemson's blitzer that's coming and does the get over here motion, come on, and then stones the guy. It's an offense that's really clicking on all cylinders, and it is really because of Jameis Winston.
When you look at Florida State, obviously everything has been going so well for them to this point in the season. It may very well continue throughout the second half of the year. But if there's one concern that maybe Miami can expose a little bit, what do you think that it is?
You know, I think Miami wants to play this game at a very slow pace. If you get an 8-11 possession type game against FSU, you have a shot to make it close. If this game is played at FSU's pace, which is a little bit quicker this year, and you know teams are getting that 11-14 possession range, mm-hmm. that you really have no shot as an underdog in Tallahassee. I don't believe, because if you give Winston that many at bats, it's just not going to happen for you. But I do think that Duke Johnson is a really, really good back, and Miami's offensive line is a quality offensive line. I don't know if it's the best offensive line in the country, like some of the radio folks down in South Florida have been saying. But in any case, FSU earlier on in the year when they were experimenting with their new defensive lineups, which is a kind of an undersold story. This team lost 11 NFL draft picks and a couple other guys, NFL free agents. They lost seven coaches, an entirely new defensive staff. They're putting in Nick Saban's Alabama system, which is very difficult to learn and implement in just a year. They were trying out some different lineups earlier in the year against some of these pro-style teams, and they had some struggles stopping the run. Now, they've moved some stuff around. They used Christian Jones, their really good outside backer, on the inside early on in the year, and he was just terrible. The guy did not have good instincts on the inside. And so they're like, well, after four games, this is not any good. They moved him back to the outside, and he's been great there again. But in doing so, we've really not seen Florida State play a true pro-style offense in the last three games since the move was made. So we don't necessarily know just how good they'll be able to stop the run. I think if you're Miami, you have to hope that Duke Johnson can consistently move the chains, you know, wind the clock, keep Florida State's offense off the field. And then if you're them, you really got to hope he pops two or three big ones.
Yeah, having watched Miami the last couple of weeks, it certainly seems to me that the strength is their running game, because you never know what's going to happen when they drop back to pass the ball. Stephen Morris has had some issues, certainly throwing the football, and it's caused them some problems. But I think if you saw last week's game against Wake Forest, the first half was a mess, but as soon as they decided to commit to that running game and just let Duke Johnson take over control, things changed very quickly. I don't know if it happens quite that way against Florida State, because obviously this is going to be a much tougher opponent than Wake Forest was, but I think that's certainly going to be one of the keys for Al Golden. You know, going into this game, Florida State is a huge favorite. Lots been said about the record-breaking spread that this game has. I know you take a look at the betting lines a little bit from time to time. So what's your take on this? Is this a game that Florida State should be covering? Which way would you go on this one?
You know, it's a tough line. Last week, if you looked at the futures lines, Florida State was only a 14-point favorite, and I think them coming out and dropping 35 on NC State in the first 15 minutes of the ball game, combined with Miami's continued struggle against Wake Forest, they really moved this to a point to where professionals could not back Florida State, you know, at anything less than 20. Like at 17, I think you would see a decent bit of public action and all of the professional action on this. So now they made this thing 22-21, I believe, it opened, so that the public would take Miami because they think they're getting three touchdowns with the top 10 team, and the pro action could balance it out by taking Florida State. I don't know that there's a whole lot of value necessarily in Florida State minus 22.5 here, particularly not if Miami is able to play this game at its pace. And that's not necessarily an easy thing to do in Tallahassee with the crowd as it is, and Winston wanting to go more up-tempo and moving the ball up and down the field. But yeah, I think that If Florida State has a chance to cover this and a chance to go big, I do think that Jimbo Fisher will leave his guys in there and try to run this thing up if they have the chance. It's a primetime game. Having your quarterback play like that is very big for recruiting as well. It's his chance to really have one of his Heisman moments in Heisman games, and it's a chance to really impress voters with all of the eyes in the country really on this ballgame, because there's not a whole lot of other good games going on that night. I don't know that I necessarily see a whole lot of value in Florida State here, though. 14 or 17, certainly. But you can be up four touchdowns in the fourth quarter, and Miami can score a late garbage time, score against your second teamers late if Fisher puts them in, and you'll lose the best. There's probably better values this weekend, but I will note this. The last couple times that a top 10 team has been favored by this much over another top 10 team, the games really have not been close. I know we had 95 Nebraska, I believe, hosting Kansas State. Nebraska covered that when they were 24-point favorite. And then last year, we actually had number 11 Mississippi State, an undefeated team, going into Alabama. Bama beat them, I think, 38-7. And then there was, I think, one other time, Duke, in the early 90s, I think back before Spurrier left, they were a three-touchdown or three-and-a-half-touchdown underdog to somebody. This late in the year, they were undefeated, so it's the other team. And they got crushed as well. So it's very rare for Vegas to go out on the limb like this and say, we're going to lay a three-touchdown spread on a quote-unquote top 10 matchup.
Yeah, so spend your money wisely is what I'm hearing from you, basically.
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah, that's probably good advice anytime you're going to look at the spread. So anyway, but I want to thank you so much for your time today. Before I let you go, though, I just want to give you a chance to let people know how they can get in touch with you, what you have going on. I know you've got a some kind of fundraiser you're doing with your podcast.
Yeah, one of my buddies was trying to win a competition for Home Depot, which is to host game day. And in doing so, I guess for each positive RSVP he got on the Facebook event, he was going to donate, I believe, 10 cents to ALS. Or not to ALS, obviously. ALS.
Right.
And I thought that was pretty cool. My dad was a firefighter for a long time and lost one of his fellow firefighters to ALS. So I said, let's team up and put the podcast together with this, and we get a lot of listeners to that. And so we're doing that. You can find that on our homepage there, TomHawkNation.com.
Well, I'll make sure to put a link up on the write-up for this show on crystalballrun.com. If we can send one person your way to help that good cause, we'll consider that a victory. So, but it was great getting a chance to talk to you again. I know it's been a while. Definitely look forward to seeing your coverage of this game and everything else going on at Tomahawk Nation and around college football on the SB Nation network. So have a good weekend, all right?
Thanks, Kevin. Enjoyed it.
So my thanks once again to Bud Elliott from Tomahawk Nation, part of the SB Nation network. He's got a lot of great recruiting analysis and a lot of other stuff going on in the world of college football. So make sure you check him out on Twitter at Tomahawk Nation. Make sure you follow Crystal Ball Run on Twitter as well at Crystal Ball Run. And again, we're on Facebook at facebook.com/Crystal Ball Run. You can also check us out on Google Plus, iTunes, and of course YouTube. So we've got a lot of ways to keep in touch with what's going on at Crystal Ball Run. Of course, the best way to go is right to crystalballrun.com. Make sure you're there. And once you're there, make sure you subscribe to our newsletter that we send out twice a week. And we've got a lot of stuff coming up for you in the next couple weeks, because it's going to be hitting the home stretch in college football. As the BCS chase is on, the Heisman race is heating up, and it's going to be a lot of fun down the next month of the college football season. We've got a lot of stuff for you. We have some big games coming up next week, so make sure you check out our podcast next week. We'll be talking some Oregon, Stanford, Baylor, Oklahoma. That's just a couple of big games that are going to get an early start on the weekend, next Thursday night. So we'll be sure to get a podcast out for you to look ahead to those games, as well as everything else that's going around in college football. Again, I'm Kevin McGuire. Give me a follow on Twitter at KevinOnCFB. And for everybody at CrystalBallRun.com, for Bud Elliott from Tomahawk Nation, thank you so much for listening. We'll talk to you soon.